All right, well, I really want to thank you for the opportunity to present this work here. We're going to be talking about language needs and health literacy of postpartum mothers on a large obstetric service. This is, I have to say, I've been in town a couple of days and I had my pocketbook stolen. And I lost all my identification and I lost my telephone. And I realized how relevant it was to this topic because I'm learning how to navigate the world without all of these wonderful access we have to information and telephone and materials in our language. I think it's really relevant to the experience of patients who are LEP in our health system. So made me a little more sensitive. So I have nothing to disclose. So I think that there's been a lot of work that's done to help us understand that there's populations, that the diverse populations in the U.S. Are increasingly challenging for the healthcare system, and people with limited English proficiency are a particularly vulnerable population. They're at increased risk for medical errors and complications related to language barriers. And this is really relevant to our obstetrics population. If you look at the birth cohort of the U.S., 25% of women were born outside of this country. So if we're going to look at a large population who traverses our hospital systems, this is a particularly relevant one because of the volume and because they're usually coming and not necessarily assimilated to the point where their language skills are very strong. Hospital systems need to learn how to care for these patients in a safe and efficient way that is culturally respectful and also meets the needs of the healthcare system. So in 2004, the Office for Civil Rights issued a policy guidance for Title VI compliance that states that LEP persons need to be notified about the availability of free interpretation services and that these services must not require the use of friends or family to provide interpretations. And I'm not going to talk about all of the complex issues that arise, but I'm sure we understand the problems working with family members interpreting for medical reasons. And that also medical interpreters must be competent in medical terminology and understand the issues of confidentiality and impartiality when they're interpreting. So hospitals now are required by the Joint Commission and other organizations to meet this requirement. And this requirement, I think, went into place last year, and everybody's working to try to understand how to meet that goal. So really, the question that we all need to learn how to ask patients is, what language do you need to use to understand your doctors and nurses, and how can we help systems meet that request? So the purpose of our study was to explore at our institution whether the current language services that were available are meeting the needs of our women and their families. So this was a really simple study in contrast to the prior study. This was a cross-sectional survey of all women on the postpartum service who delivered after a live birth over 6 weeks in the summer that were conducted by a little army of undergraduates that I had. We developed a local 10-question language needs survey that we pilot tested with women in the clinical offices. And we also looked at health literacy using the newest vital sign in English and Spanish because we understood that I referred to the requirement for interpreters. There's also a requirement for translated written materials if a population represents at least 5% of your population. So understanding what the role was going to be of written materials was a priority. So the setting for the survey is a large academic community hospital in the Mid-Atlantic. We have a large volume women's and children's service line worth about 6,500 deliveries each year. And we had, at the time of the survey, language services available. So we had qualified in-person Spanish medical interpreters who could be called during daytime and early evening hours during the week. We had agency interpreters who could be pre-scheduled as needed. And we also had the blue phones. I'm not sure if anybody's worked in a hospital system, but the blue phones. And this was actually a novelty. We used to just have a single phone, and this has two handles, so we can actually have people talking on the phone on one side and a provider on the phone working with the interpreter on the phone line. So our study sample was postpartum women. It was fairly simple. We approached women a day after a vaginal delivery and 2 days after a C-section. If they were going, if they were in the hospital at those points of care on Saturday and Sunday, they weren't surveyed because we were working with a bunch of undergraduates who didn't come in on the weekend. But otherwise, we only excluded women who had had a recent fetal or infant death. And for the health literacy assessment, we excluded women under 18 years of age and those who didn't speak English or Spanish. We conducted these surveys in English for everybody who spoke English. If we had a Spanish-speaking patient, we used our medical interpreters to do the survey. And for non-English, non-Spanish-speaking mothers, we trained the students to work with this telephone interpreter line to carry out the survey. So in the course of the 6 weeks, we surveyed 556 women. 75% were approached because they were there during the week, and 94% completed the language survey. And of those eligible for the health literacy assessment, 92% completed that. Other measures that we collected were language spoken at home, best language, so we asked people what they felt their best language was, and preferred language, that definition of LEP, which means the language they'd like to receive their health care in. And so those who reported prefer language other than English, we classified as LEP. We were also interested in understanding the interpreters that they were using during the course of their hospital stay. We had two categories of interpreters, qualified medical interpreters, so the in-person interpreters trained by language services, as well as the telephonic interpreters. And unqualified or ad hoc interpreters were families and friends, and unqualified staff members from the hospital. Some of them were healthcare providers, doctors, nurses, midwives, and some of them were food services staff, et cetera. We also wanted to use a measure that would give us a sense of whether, from the point of view of the women who were receiving care, was there an unmet need for an interpreter. So we asked them if there was some time during their hospital stay when they wanted an interpreter and didn't have access to one. And then finally, we also collected some demographic characteristics that we thought were relevant, including age, race, ethnicity, and their highest level of completed education. So I'm not sure if anybody's used the newest vital sign. This was our first experience with it. It's very cute. It's an ice cream food label, and it's a little hard to read here, but we give people a food label, and we ask them questions. So it requires skills in language and health. It requires language skills and numeracy skills, because there are some calculations that are done. It was developed, I want to say, by Robert Wood Johnson, I can't remember who. It was developed to be used as a simple screen in the clinical setting, and it's been validated in Spanish, and so that was one of the reasons we used it. So this was really a very descriptive study, and we used SPSS for the analysis. So just to describe our population, so we had almost 400 women surveyed. Their average age was 28, and they ranged from 16 to 42. 53% were non-Hispanic white, 30% non-Hispanic African American. 8.5% were Asian American, and 15% was Latina. Interestingly, that's higher than what we get from our hospital records, showing that we actually are underestimating our Latina population using our clerks. We had 63% who had some college or more, and almost 40% had only a high school level of education or less. So we found that 72 of our patients, so 18% of our patients, reported speaking a language other than English at home, which isn't so far off from the national data, and we're in the Mid-Atlantic, so I think it was a surprise. 67 or 17% reported their best language was not English, and 11% of the population reported that they wanted to communicate in a language other than English, and we therefore classified them as LEP. And of this group, the vast majority were Spanish speakers, so 77% were Spanish speakers, but we also had countable numbers of Mandarin speakers, as well as a number of Indian languages, and I think in all told we had 19 different languages in this small group. So we asked women again, as I said, did you have an unmet need for a medical interpretation? And among that group of LEP patients, we found that more than half reported there was a time they needed an interpreter but didn't receive one or were unable to. And there was a variety of different reasons that I'm not going to go into at this point, but we could talk about. We found that 40% reported an unmet need to discuss a medically relevant issue with a healthcare provider, and there was a small number who needed an interpreter, not for themselves, but for their family members, because as you can imagine, being a postpartum woman, interpreting for your family is probably not most appropriate. We also looked to see what types of interpreters were being used, and I color-coded them to be obvious, so green is good and red is bad. And this is any type. So one woman during the course of her stay could be using all of these different types of interpreters during her care. But it's overwhelming how many women were using families and friends to interpret during their stay. And it's also a very high percent, so 40% were using unqualified hospital staff. 23% used qualified in-person medical interpreters, which was mostly available only for Spanish speakers. And a greater number were using telephonic medical interpreters. Just to understand the health literacy needs of the patients, as I said, we used this, the newest vital sign, and we found overall about 40% tested in a range of limited health literacy. Now, we had a lot of discussions about what this really meant. So these were women who just had a baby a day or two ago. We're not sure this is really their optimal performance on this test. On the other hand, this is where they are when we're giving them discharge instructions to go home. So even though it's surprising how many had limited literacy, it's probably relevant when we're thinking about how we provide information to patients before they go home. Anyway, you were more likely to be have lower literacy if you had lower level of education, but even 25% of mothers with a college education had limited literacy at that time. So among non-LEP patient, literacy was highly linked to race and ethnicity, and a majority of Latina mothers and African-American mothers had limited health literacy, and fewer of the Asian and white mothers did. All Latina women who took the Spanish language version of the newest vital sign had limited health literacy, and I think it was the feeling of our interpreters who were working with the women that there was probably a lot of, they had never seen a food label, and they really couldn't understand what they were supposed to be doing. And so I think there's a lot of diversity with what we would see as the Latina population, and I think that the population in whom it was validated is probably very different than the population we're seeing at our community. So in summary, we found 17% of women who reported their best language was not English, and 11% were LEP. And among the group who were LEP, 40% reported an unmet need for a medical interpreter. We found very high utilization of ad hoc or unqualified interpreters, including family and hospital staff. There were high rates of limited health literacy, especially among women of color. And essentially all Spanish-speaking patients had limited Spanish health literacy based on that test. So obviously there's a lot of limitations. It's a single center. We had a small sample of LEP patients, and it probably reflects an early experience of language services program in our institution. But that was really the point of doing this, is to understand that. So in conclusion, we found that in spite of the availability of qualified medical interpreters in the hospital setting, there was still high utilization of unqualified interpreters and patients reporting an unmet need for medical interpretation. We really believed, and then we moved forward to understand better the barriers to effective utilization of qualified interpreters to guide healthcare system efforts to improve quality and safety. And we also recognize that the high prevalence of low health literacy suggests written information may not be helpful in improving communication for some populations, and we should be using that information to guide education efforts. So this has important public health implications as well. It's increasingly challenging to deal with a diverse population. And I think we all need to constantly reflect and learn from what we're doing. Deployment of services does not always create the impact we think it's going to have. One of the people we're working with on some qualitative work we're doing around this says very accurately that culture eats strategy for lunch, and so we can think we're solving this issue by hiring a lot of people to work on a language services service and put blue phones everywhere, but we really need to do more to better understand the cultural barriers that exist between providers and patients if we're really going to be effectively using these resources. I want to thank the students who did a phenomenal job over the summer working with patients and doing the survey, as well as some other folk from the institution who've worked on this and future studies that this has really propelled. Thank you.